This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a panel discussion on ocean safety.
I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us on today's panel are former City and County Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Ralph Goto, State Drowning Prevention Coordinator Bridget Velasco, and current Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Jim Howe.
People from all over come to Hawaii to swim and snorkel in the ocean, and drowning is the leading cause of death for visitors. Are we doing enough to warn and inform them about the unfamiliar hazards they'll face?
And what do local residents think? Let us hear from you. Call us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands.
And welcome to everyone on our panel. And obviously the thing that triggered this discussion was there were 9 drownings on Maui in the month of January, which is has been described as an unprecedented number. Bridget, when something like this comes to the attention of your office, how do you folks deal with that?
Yeah, to be honest, we deal with the continuing problem or issue, the public health issue of drowning throughout the year. And having a cluster like this is possibly significant if it continues on this trend. But right now, we're just kind of watching it to see if it just happens to be a cluster. Maui could end up with the same average number of fatal drownings, you know, at the end of the year, depending. So basically, it's an ongoing issue that we continually are trying to work at addressing.
What was the average number? Was it 16, I believe?
Yeah, I think it was between 16 and the annually Maui gets between 16 and between 10 and 18.
Well, Jim, how this issue in general is your current Kuleana, and obviously it's an ongoing concern as for you as Ocean Safety Director.
Absolutely.
What are your tools in addressing it?
Sure. So I think to help us understand, there are some really major distinctions between Oahu and the program that we have in place here and the neighbor islands. We're very aware that as a policy, our visitor industry has begun to market very aggressively for visitor arrivals to the neighbor islands. And I think as a consequence, you know, they have a need for enhanced safety services for the folks that are going there. Here on Oahu last year, we had about 5.6 million visitor arrivals. And we have a resident population just shy of 1 million here. And we know that on a daily basis that we have about 100,000 visitors here on the island. Of course, those folks are going to the beach. They're going to the ocean. That's why they come here. We have statistics that show as many as 98% of some portions of that marketplace will visit at least one city beach park while they're here on their stay. Here on Oahu, again, we have a very, very robust ocean safety program, and it starts with our lifeguards out on the beach. We provide lifeguard service at 42 of our beach areas on the island here. So to help understand, we have 178 identified beaches, and we also have 198 miles of coastline. My job is to provide emergency response, education, and prevention services for all of those areas, including all of the waters extending a mile offshore. It's a huge task. We do that with the towers, but those are fixed. And typically, the towers can cover about a half a mile on either side, and they can go out about a quarter mile offshore. So to supplement that part of our program, we have what we call our mobile responders. These are 911 dispatch mobile units. We have 16 of those daily here on the island. And those are for our responses where there are not lifeguard towers. So we are able to provide a patrol and a response service. So a little different than our fire department where they're back in the station. These folks are out on the beach or they're out on the water patrolling, looking for situations that may occur and preventing. So they're very important for prevention. And they also, of course, respond based on 911 calls. But that is our program here in Oahu.
Jim, we have a caller on the line, and this is germane to what you were just saying. Line 2, Colin Yamamoto is a retired battalion chief of ocean safety on Maui, a name known to you guys. Colin, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Colin.
What's on your mind?
I just got wind of this, so I called up the station to...
I'm sorry, Colin, I can't hear you. Can you talk a little louder, get closer to your handset?
Oh, sure. I just got wind of this. Someone just told me about it, so I just called the station, and they put me on hold. So anyway, I'm just chiming in and adding my two cents, whatever I can add to this conversation.
Okay. What are those two cents?
I just tuned in, so I just heard Jim talk about the system on Oahu. If you want, I can talk about the system on Maui.
Colin, I tell you what, well, let's get this discussion going. Why don't you check in a little bit later in the show, and you'll have more to respond to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And actually, if one thing I could ask Colin to verify, I have that 12 to 25 drownings for Maui County per year. So, Colin, I just wanted to confirm that's what we have for fatal ocean drowning.
The latest figures that I saw, Maui was averaging about 19, but the trend is going up. So, and already we have 10 on Maui.
Right. The first We did have a peak in 2015 at 25, is what I'm seeing. And then just to go back to real quick with Jim's point about the robust lifeguard services on Oahu. Not coincidentally, Oahu has the lowest drowning rate in the state.
Ralph Goto, you're Jim's predecessor at the city and county, and of course between the two of you guys, there's lots of institutional memory about all this. But one of the questions that arises is, you know, the proportion to the number of visitors. You know, are we inviting so many visitors that we're creating a kind of a disproportion?
Well, you know, if you read the paper or you watch the news every night, where the visitor industry has touted the increase in visitor arrivals, the increase in income from rooms, which is great for the state. But I think there's also, to balance that, there's a low responsibility from the industry as a whole to provide for some safety strategies. And it's not just lifeguards. There's systemically lots of things that are going on. There's prevention stuff. There's videos, as Jim mentioned. There's the website that we have. There are a lot of efforts being done. I see it kind of as a shortcoming in the system. And when I'm talking about the system, you know, last Friday you interviewed the infamous button pusher. And, you know, we're quick to want to know whose fault things are. You know, and so we look at drownings. How many drownings do we have on Maui? How many do we have on Oahu? Well, I don't think drownings are the only indicator of what's going on. There's rescues happening. There are prevention efforts going on every day that, you know, how do we measure that? How do we measure the success of that? So I think systemically we all have to get involved in this and figure out the best ways to do prevention.
It's too easy to find someone whose fault it is, right? Because then you don't have to deal with a system.
So I'd kind of like to go back to what Ralph just said, and really the job of our lifeguards out on the beach, the primary focus is prevention. And last year, our lifeguards on Oahu did 2.5 million preventive actions. These are rescues or drownings or major injuries or even minor injuries that just never happened. And as Ralph mentioned, it's a little hard to measure, but we ask what's working. That's working. And as Bridget mentioned, although we have the most people on our beaches, we have the lowest rate of drowning in the state. So we know some things do absolutely work, and that's the efforts of our lifeguards out on the beaches preventing these things from happening in the first place.
But you would like to see more lifeguards expand the program. I don't know, maybe put in guards where we don't have guards now?
So I think the key, Catherine, is that our program here on Oahu has been growing at about 6% a year for the last 5 years. So we're trying our best to keep up with the increasing demands on our services. Right now, our focus is to extend the hours of coverage by our folks out on the beaches. We are right now, for the most part, from 9 to 5:30. We'd like to expand that in the next couple of years to 10 hours a day, and also then beyond that to daylight hours. So right now, if you get in trouble and there's no lifeguard on the beach and you call 911, our fire department will respond. But as I mentioned earlier, they're back in a station or they may be on another case. So that response time is a little bit slower than having somebody on the beach. The key point to this is that an a medical emergency or a situation that happens in the ocean is much more time sensitive than the exact same situation that happens on the land. If you don't get somebody there in 5 to 6 minutes in the ocean, you'll die from drowning. If you have the same issue on land, you don't have that problem.
I think also that, you know, when you say, do we need more lifeguards? Sure. You know, our professional bias is, yes, we need more lifeguards. But it's not just lifeguards. It's the whole resources that it takes. You don't just plant a tower at the beach and put a trained lifeguard there. There are a lot of other issues that, you know, have to be addressed. And our professional bias is that the lifeguard is the best video, is the best sign, is the best, you know, website. And by having people there, like Jim said, the response time is really important. And, you know, guys and girls, are trained to respond, you know, and people need to understand the importance of having our resources out there.
Now, snorkeling is the number one, I guess, cause of drowning.
It's the number one activity done when a person fatally drowns in Hawaii.
Right, and I know looking on the west side, you folks just recently positioned jet skis over there to be able to respond quickly because you've got the resorts out there and they're sending people to a snorkeling area, which really isn't a beginner snorkeler area based on the surf at the, you know, the time of year. Talk about that.
So I don't know if there's any beginning snorkeling area in the ocean, frankly. I really don't know that exists. The ocean's a dynamic environment, and people that aren't familiar with it, they can get in trouble very, very rapidly in situations that those of us sitting around this table or those of us that live here on the island, we're very familiar with. But for someone that's never been in the ocean or has little exposure to it, those conditions can present a life-threatening situation almost immediately. So, to Electric Beach. One of our 16 mobile response groups is now based out of there. So they're not permanently stationed there, but we are using that as our forward operating base for that unit, which covers from Waianae Small Boat Harbor all the way down to Pearl Harbor. So they'll be there, and the bulk of their activity is there, but they're also responsible for that entire coastline. So that's the difference between a tower function and a mobile response function. But they are indeed making an impact. So we know that snorkeling is a very popular activity. We know that Hanama Bay routinely closes the gate at sometimes 8 in the morning because it's full up. So those folks are going to other locations. Electric Beach is one of them. Also out at Shark's Cove is becoming an extremely popular snorkeling destination during the summer months. And we just had a fatality there last week, or actually earlier this week, I'm afraid. So these areas need high levels of service, and this is something that we need to really strive towards.
To Jim's point, we're probably never going to saturate, especially the neighbor islands, and so really we're looking at that culture of messaging, not just the visitor, but everyone, that there really is a part of you that needs to make sure that you're comfortable when you get in the water with whatever equipment you have on, even if it's no equipment, and for sure never going in the water by yourself, always making sure you're with someone, and someone that's capable of knowing where you are if they need to let someone response know, and possibly performing CPR or some other life-saving needs if needed. So we think the messaging really needs to continue to promote absolutely the golden standard, go to a lifeguarded beach, but we've done studies, we've done a lot of qualitative research to get to the point where we're at with some of the messages that are out there. And visitors reinforce our understanding that they're not going to lifeguarded beaches, number one, because it's not convenient, number two, because the activities they want to do are not at all of these beaches, and number three, they're saturated, the parking lot's full, they're not going to wait around, they're going to go to the next beach.
If you're just joining us, our subject is ocean safety. Our guests in the studio are State Drowning Prevention Coordinator Bridget Velasco, whose voice you just heard, the current Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Jim Howe, and former City and County of Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Ralph Goto. We urge our listeners to call us at 941-3689 on Oahu, or 1-877-941-3689. We have a caller on the line, Michelle from Kaneohe. What's on your mind?
Hi. My question is, we're talking about prevention once we get to the beach and listening to the lifeguards, and I think a lot of times people don't bother listening to the lifeguards. They're so excited about getting into the water and all of that. So my question is to the visitor industry and the airlines, how about public service announcements on airplanes while they're kind of basically a captive audience coming from, you know, international and mainland locations? Because I think a lot of times people kind of have the attitude about Hawaii that it's a great big Disneyland and nothing bad is going to happen, and they come here and they get in trouble.
Exactly,
Michelle.
So anyway,
Michelle, that's my comment. I'll take the rest of this off the air. Thank you, folks.
Thanks, Michelle.
So to Michelle's point, we are trying to distribute out for pre-arrival. When somebody gets on the internet and looking, warm place to be, warm place to go to, place to go to the beach before, you know, when from their home in Wisconsin. From that point all the way through on the airplane to arrival, post-arrival. And that's really, as she mentioned, you know, the visitor industry has probably the widest reach. So working in partnership with them is a relatively new phenomenon, and these two guys sitting here can speak to the trenches they've dug to get us to this point. With the airplane, with airlines itself, we have approached a major airline, and there is a little bit on there right now, and it's kind of hidden within some other videos that are kind of the free side, and still working on that.
Ralph, can you chime in? Because she's right. You folks made the inroads early on and had to kind of fight the battles.
Sure. And thank you, Michelle, for bringing that up. We worked on this issue for 25 years. You know, what better way to get messages to the visitors and show them the video on the plane? And believe me, Chris knows we've been through iterations of what should we say, what should we tell people. We don't want to scare them. We want to inform. And I think over the years and to right now, that whole medium has changed. I mean, you're not sitting in a plane watching one screen. You're watching stuff on your phone. You're watching stuff on your own personal screen. So that's been a challenge. And I think one of the things we're trying to do is figure out a way to get information to people via the new technology. And we're still working on that, and hopefully we're making some inroads.
Can we talk about Hanama Bay? Jim, you had brought that up, and they did have a, you know, captive audience, right? You've got to watch the film before you go in the water, and I've seen it, you know, umpteen times, but I understand we've got a new video now that's just rolled out.
That's correct. And very fortunately, we were able to work with our Parks Department, and there is strong safety messaging within that video. And I have not personally seen it, so I'm not going to go much further than that. But my understanding is that everyone is seeing this information. We're now providing the safety information to folks. I was also contacted several days ago by our Director of Enterprise Services. We're now going to be sending out messaging from the Finn concession rental about specific safety information for folks that rent snorkels from the city-operated concession, or I'm sorry, authorized, not operated, but authorized concession. We are, from the city perspective, on our way to getting the safety information to as many folks as we can. One other aspect is that we just went live on what's now known as Honolulu Info. So we used to have a service called Nixle, and Nixle was a push messaging application. We basically took Nixle and put it in-house. It's now renamed Honolulu Info. And we now have ocean and beach conditions and hazard information that you can get a push message coming out through your phone if you subscribe to the site. So that reaches right now about 19,000 subscribers. And this is just another way that we can get information out so that you can decide when and where to go to the beach based on your experience level and really what your desired activity is, so we can help you find the safest place so that you can have a great time.
And, Jim, that's a free app.
That is a free app, yes. But you do have to go online and download it. Mm-hmm. It has a variety of other information from services that the city does. But this is a new feature of it.
The issue for a long time, we keep coming back to snorkeling. And the issue has a great deal to do with people who are inexperienced in the ways of the ocean. Fair to say, Ralph?
I think that, now that there's been so much attention put on the snorkeling issue and the phenomena, I got a call last week from ABC News on the East Coast. So, you know, it's got some attention. And one of the things that we're trying to do, we have a subcommittee of Bridges Advisory Group, is to determine really what's going on. You know, we used to think, you know, it was tourists that didn't know any better and they panicked and they drowned. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a little more than that. There may be physiological reasons. There may be pre-existing medical things. So we have a group of experts assembled to try to determine really what's happening. And the result of that group hopefully will be to message and to develop some messaging, some meaningful messaging to get to people before they go snorkeling.
Here's a caller, Aaron, of the caller. We got an email from Aaron Dunnebolf on our talkback line. Is carbon monoxide poisoning a possibility with the new snorkel mask?
Well, that's one of the areas we're looking at. There are theories. There are a lot of theories about what happens when you put a snorkel in your mask and cover your face, a snorkel in your mouth and cover your face with a mask. There may be some pH issues. There may be some reduced airflow issues, and those are areas that we're trying to research. And in the meantime, what we want to do is develop some meaningful messaging. You know, be careful. Generally, be careful. Swim with a lifeguard. Those are great. Okay, but what's really going on is what we're trying to find out.
Right, and officials just recently started tracking this on the type of equipment because we didn't used to do that before, right?
Exactly. So this all goes back to the public health approach. We need to start with, we just can't react, right? We have to start with the data. So backtracking even beyond the just snorkeling, but in general, the data does show us that if you're over 50, if you're male, if you have some known or underlying specifically circulatory diseases, but generally something that's going on with your heart or your lungs, you are at increased risk. We do know that. And then it's, you know, taking that to message is a little bit maybe difficult, and we're looking at that. But beyond that, as Ralph said, until we have the data to show what we're messaging, we have to be patient. It's frustrating. We wish we could just say this, don't use this type of snorkel or whatever it may be. But we have to be careful that we are specific and evidence-based in our messaging.
But what we can sort of still take a general approach that people are being put in an unfamiliar setting without a lot of practice in swimming in the ocean, things like riptides, how to use a snorkel.
And that's
safely.
Something, exactly, even just that awareness. We need to, again, looking back at our qualitative research, we need to step back and just that awareness. We found out that people who come to Hawaii in general, both east and west travelers think sharks and rocks and the depth of the water are their highest risks. And even being informed of that, just within focus group type settings, there wasn't a big change in the understanding, the knowledge. So we know, just like regular marketing, social marketing, to get this awareness at their forefront to make sure they understand what the risks are. And then from there, we go into what behavior changes can we message, what calls to action. And we're still, as Ralph said, we're working on those specifics.
A caller from Haiku, Maui. Dwayne, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Dwayne, what's your comment?
I have a friend over here that she's tried to get the airlines to put a video on, but she's been going through this for years, and it's going on deaf ears. That would be great if they'd show a video. Our snorkelers over here, if you've ever snorkeled, I've been doing it for 40 years. If you're not in shape, you hyperventilate and you pass out. That's another thing that the visitors should be notified about, you know, doing. Also, we need more lifeguards over here. We have beaches that don't even have lifeguards on them. Also, our drowners, they're drowning in 4 and 5 foot of water. So that means that they're either got a medical problem or either they're not breathing properly, and they pass out because they hyperventilate.
Thanks for your call, Dwayne. Any response?
And thanks, Dwayne. If something like you need to be able to go up so many flights of stairs without, you know, losing your breath or something like that, if we could kind of nail that down. Right now, exactly, you need to be in better shape than just being able to float to snorkel. we do feel that that's a pretty strong thing that we can say. And then to your point about the videos, in the hotel rooms we have videos, but those are mostly in hotel rooms on Oahu. And so we're working with the producer, Dennis Burns, of those videos to get those out to neighbor islands, to Maui. And as well, there are people who don't stay in hotels anymore. We know that a lot up in Haikou. There's probably a bunch of bed and breakfasts. So messaging in different ways with the platforms that people are looking at these days, apps, websites, videos.
So I'd kind of like to chime in on that subject. I mentioned earlier that on Oahu we have about 5.6 million visitors last year. Nearly 50% of those were from Asia, from Japan. I want to make the point, and it seems self-evident, that if you don't know how to swim, you have no business going snorkeling in the ocean, period. And we see an awful lot of these folks that are attempting to snorkel that don't have even basic swimming skills. So this is a big part of the problem. We do thousands of rescues at Hanama Bay a year of non-swimmers, but they're still told that snorkeling is a benign activity and that you can go snorkeling even if you don't know how to swim, and that's just not the case.
I think it's the broader issue of, you know, marketing versus safety.
Exactly.
And how much of your marketing efforts are you willing to sacrifice for safety? And, you know, our position is it shouldn't even be a question. You know, safety should be the primary concern. But, you know, if you go on the – if you just Googled snorkeling rentals in the state, there are hundreds of them. You know, so I think one of the things we need to do is get those guys involved, the rental companies, the people that are selling equipment, and get those people involved in our conversation to get their input and also to help craft our messages.
The caller on line one who can speak to that, Greg from Kauai.
Hey, how's it going, you guys?
All right, Greg. You're a professional dive instructor. What's your take on this?
Well, my take, there's, you know, a couple things. I offer complimentary lessons up at some of the resorts here on Kauai. We teach people how to snorkel and scuba, and it's amazing how many people wouldn't come to get instruction on snorkeling. You know, like, they figure, oh, I can breathe through the tube, but they don't know how to use a mouthpiece, which causes water to go in their mouth. They don't know how to clear a mask. They don't. There's so much value in getting some instruction. And I've seen that the Kauai lifeguards on their brochures are starting to promote to get some lessons. But it's, you know, I think it needs to be a mindset where people can find a place to get some instruction before they go out there on their own. Then they can learn their limitations underneath the guise of a professional and learn the right equipment, how to use it. That was just some input I had. It's kind of hard to tell someone they need a lesson. But also, I was wondering if there's any information on those new full face masks, because I got suckered into buying six of those things, and they, you know, they're not presentable, in my opinion, to put someone in and have them safely be able to use and get out of the water.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, and as you were talking about the, you know, the instruction, everybody in the room, they're all shaking their heads, so I think they're in agreement.
Nodding
with
your heads.
Yes.
That would be affirmative.
Yes, the affirmative, for sure. If you're just joining us, our subject is ocean safety, and our guests in the studio are State Drowning Prevention Coordinator Bridget Velasco, current Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Jim Howe, and former City and County of Honolulu Ocean Safety Director Ralph Godo.
The last caller brought up something that Ralph and Jim and I worked on, a safety project related to snorkeling many years ago. And one of the things that we found out, and this is something that Greg from Kauai just alluded to, is people don't self-report accurately. If you ask somebody who's about to go into the ocean, are you going to be okay? Are you a strong enough swimmer? They will inevitably tell you they're a stronger swimmer than they are. Fair to say, Jim?
I would say that people definitely have an experience from where they live and where they're coming from, which mm-hmm. may be drastically different than being here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
There you go. Lakes versus the ocean, for example.
That right? would be perfect, yes.
But the, you know, a thing that you've alluded to more than once, Ralph, is that the kind of the tension between promotion and safety information. And the question arises, you know, is should there even be a tension? Should a safety message necessarily be seen as something that would discourage visitors? Or can it be folded into a way that it becomes part of a general welcome to Hawaii message?
Yeah, I think it could be done tastefully and still be meaningful. I really think we need to get the guys that are renting equipment, selling equipment involved in what we're doing, because I think the information that they give right there at point of sale or point of rental is going to be very meaningful. We feel that the informed user is going to be a lot safer than someone that goes just on their own. You know, as part of our research in this whole snorkeling phenomena, we polled different areas of the country and the world. Okay, where are these snorkeling issues happening? And someone said, well, look at the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, because I think the numbers there are pretty comparable to what, you know, people going snorkeling and diving on the Great Barrier Reef. One of the things that we found out is that if you go diving on the Great Barrier Reef, you got to go on a boat or on a charter where there are people supervising you. And in Hawaii, it's a completely different situation where you can virtually go to any beach at any time and just go. So the supervision and the instruction, I think, are very important.
I'd just like to kind of bring in this point that this snorkeling issue is not unique to Hawaii. We see the same issue, as Ralph mentioned, in other parts of the nation. The manatee snorkeling issue in North and South Carolina, going with the manatees, they have a similar issue. The Great Barrier Reef absolutely has a very similar issue. We just noticed this week that the Australian government looks to be passing national legislation to require the use of life vests for people that are snorkeling if they're identified as high-risk snorkelers. Now, I don't have a whole lot of information about this yet. I've reached out to my counterparts in Australia, and I'm trying to understand more. But they're now beginning to look at an enforcement approach to actually requiring people to use certain kinds of equipment. We do see some of that happening voluntarily here, particularly at Hanama Bay. We've noticed a lot more folks coming down with flotation devices. And we believe, and if this is truly the case, that some of the I'm going to call them more conscientious rental groups are recommending or providing these kinds of safety devices for their customers, and we'd like to applaud that.
Let's talk about the barriers that are in the way, because Chris and I, you know, we grew up with news, and we're used to things happening fast. We've known you folks for decades. We know you folks have been out there where we're working in the trenches trying to make inroads on some of this messaging, and it's taken a long time, whether it's a film at Hanama, which is, you know, 15 years old, and it takes 2 years to get the script rewritten. You know, talk about that.
So one of the issues I see it with drowning in general, I'm a public health educator and specific to injuries, but unlike other public health issues, there aren't a lot of evidence-based protective as well as risk factors that are known. I mean, we've spoken about lifeguards and some of the messaging and then the risk factors, but overall, when you compare it to something like a chronic disease that we know about, we know a lot about what to do and what not to do. So that in and of itself. And then the actual evaluation and research, which is one of the things that my office is tasked with. We look at the Hawaii Injury Prevention Plan recommendations, and one of which is to evaluate current strategies and how do we do that. So that in and of itself, as Jim mentioned, specific to ocean, changing conditions, How do we factor that into the variables that we're studying, right? So kind of the logistics of studying. That being said, the public health process in and of itself does take about 2 years when you go from start to finish for any type of specific messaging. That's just because you work through I mentioned a little bit of, you know, we started off with some, you know, asking Hawaii Tourism Authority to do some ocean safety exit surveys, intercept surveys at the airport. We just wanted to find out knowledge, beliefs, and attitudes about the target group, the highest demographic that we're trying to reach. When we found out what they're thinking, then we went and did focus groups and found out what they thought of what we're thinking. And then we took message drafts and then we interviewed them and found out which messages they thought they would respond to and change behavior. So that is the whole process. And then that's just, you know, the framework and the development. And then we have to go to distribution. And of course, with this specific population, it's a repeated every day somebody else comes off the airplane. So I hope that answers your question in terms of the long term. We look at tobacco settlement, you know, that took several decades to get to that point. So
there's a caller on the line to speak to what you just said, Bridget. Caitlin from Waikiki, what's your comment?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. My question was if there would be any type of way that you could mark the specific beaches as to a skill level that you need to be before entering the ocean like you do on ski resorts. And that would be my question. Thank you.
That's Caitlin. Thank you.
So, Caitlin, we actually do have that available to you. It's called HawaiiBeachSafety.com. And you can go there. It has a very similar hazard rating to a ski resort. And that rating, we've had that in place for many, many years. It's been used by millions of people. So I would recommend that you go take a look at it. One of the things we are discussing is expanding it now based on, Bridget, some of the focus groups. Originally, we only show beaches where there's lifeguards. And our marketing first principle has been to tell people, go to beaches where there's lifeguards. Well, we now know that people are going to many other beaches where there's not lifeguards, and they're getting in trouble and they're dying. So can we force everybody or continue that? We're still talking about that, but it looks as if we may want to expand this to areas where there's no lifeguards so that you can have that same information available.
To try to address Catherine's question about the process and why it takes so long, I spent 30 years working in local government, and kind of became aware of how long it takes to get things done. I think we've got attention and we've got some momentum right now, unfortunately, because of the spike in the drownings. But, I've always maintained that when those things happen, that we have to be ready to provide the answers. And I think we do. It's not just, more lifeguard towers, more jet skis. It's the whole program needs attention. There's legislation now, or proposed legislation to do that. That may take a couple of years. There's local government, there's the councils, there's the administration that have, everyone has to embrace this. Otherwise, it's not going to happen quickly, or it's not going to happen at all.
So thank you, Ralph. You asked about headwinds, and we ran into a pretty significant headwind last legislative session. Some very important protections for our lifeguards and for our counties for liability protection were sunsetted. That is a major headwind. We are now faced with a position of an increased exposure, liability risk, and financial risk to the counties. And it's through either the actions or, in this case, inactions of our personnel out on the beaches. We have what's called duty to warn to people that go to the state beach and the state oceans via the city property. And if we don't execute that duty to warn, then we, the lifeguards and the counties, can be sued for negligence. So one of the questions this begs is, do we have to start warning people that snorkeling is a dangerous activity? And if we don't do that, are we negligent?
Interesting point. We have a caller on the line, Carl from Honolulu. You have a question about liability for lifeguards?
Well, yes, I do. It was kind of similar to what he was just talking about right there. My son is a lifeguard, and I am kind of concerned and wondering what exactly is his liability as far as putting his life at risk to go out and try to save somebody.
What's the answer to that, Jim?
Well,
it's in kind of limbo right now.
It's actually pretty complex, and I don't want it. I want to try to simplify the issue. The challenge here is that if your son as a lifeguard does what he's trained to do and stays within the scope of his training, then he will be defended if a lawsuit comes by his corporation counsel, his employer. If he goes outside of his training, then he would be exposed personally. So our lifeguards have to understand and know that we train them to do things a specific way. But here's the challenge. The ocean is the most dynamic environment in the world. We can't train people to say you do A, B, C, D, E outcome work. What we do with our ocean lifeguards, very different from pools or lakes, is we say this is the toolkit that you have to choose from when you go out there to execute a life-saving mission. And each one of those lifeguards has to make a split-second decision of what tool to use, how to enter the water, where to enter it, how to get to the person. There's breaking waves, there's currents. there's rocks, there's obstacles, there's other people in the water. And so this becomes subject of much judgment. And we have people on the beach kind of Monday morning quarterbacking, watching our lifeguards execute this mission using their experience and skill and judgment, using that toolkit, and they're called into question. Fair enough. But what this does is it now requires that that lifeguard is going to be deposed and have to justify every one of those split-second decisions that he or she may have had to make, and it may be years later. And I want everybody to understand that our lifeguards are not out there for any other reason than to help. They're there to help. They're going to do their best. But it's not a perfect world out there. It's tough. So now we have a situation where we're going to have to defend them, and we're going to have to spend our taxpayer dollars to defend those lawsuits.
So what do you tell your lifeguards when somebody comes up on the beach and has their mask and snorkel, and they go up and they say, I don't know how to use this. Can you give me a lesson? Are your lifeguards supposed to do that, or is that crossing the boundary?
So the first job of a lifeguard is to keep eyes on the water, because in this particular case, we would not give a lesson. It would take away from our primary mission, which is to watch everybody and assist everybody. We can't focus down in that arena.
Ralph, Jim just referred to the whole liability issue, and since you're retired, you're able to sort of look at this from a, I don't know, global perspective, and it's obviously something you've been dealing with for a long time. What would you like to see done differently with regard to the whole liability issue for lifeguards?
That's a great question, Chris. Thank you.
Just trying to cause trouble, Ralph. You know me.
After spending a few years down at the legislature, informing them, educating them, and hopefully getting through some of their own opinions about things. You know, what Jim's talking about, unfortunately, last session was a result of political, legal, and some complicated issues. That immunity, you know, the question was, why should the lifeguards have immunity? Why don't the other first responders, like the firemen, the policemen, and the EMS folks have it? And the answer is just what Jim said. The environment is dynamic. It's a whole different issue of how they respond. This whole idea of negligence is the individual lifeguard going to be liable for whatever he or she does? And the way that we understand it is if they act in the scope of their job, how they're trained, then that's all we can expect from them. I am a little bit dismayed about what's going on with the legislature and how decisions are made, but that's a personal thing. And I think we have to live with that process and rely on the process to make things right and to make things just.
I think this segues a little bit into, we're talking a lot about fatalities, we're talking mm-hmm. a lot about visitors. There's issues, you know, we have residents drowning, almost as many if you look at the raw numbers. So the rates are a lot different for visitors. And we're talking about children, most of child drowning, fortunately not too many per year, but when they do drown, it is more commonly in the ocean, even more than swimming pools. And then our military. So we have all these different areas to look at when we concern ourselves about ocean drowning. And then we're also talking about major injuries like spinal cord injuries.
Right, and you mentioned our youth, and I know there are certain schools that are really pushing to get kids' swim abilities up. I know MidPack was one of, I think, the first schools that require students, if you want to graduate, you have to know how to swim, and they'll work with you, you know. I think I see Kamehameha School kids out there competing in a lot of, swim races just to kind of get their skill level up and their fitness level up. But what more can we do on that level of teaching our keiki to swim?
Right. So statistics show that if the parents don't know how to swim, the children usually don't know how to swim, and vice versa. So breaking that connection or creating that skill level at whatever level you can, the earlier you can start, the ability to swim, we consider a protective factor. We don't have a lot of robust studies that connect that to decrease in drowning, unfortunately, but we continue to look to that. And so we advocate for swimming lessons as early as conceivably behaviorally possible, depending on the coordination of the child. And that is one actual, I would say, focus area that our Hawaii State Drowning and Aquatic Injury Prevention Advisory Committee, of which both of these guys here have been or are co-chairs, along with Gerald Kosaki, Battalion Chief on the Big Island. So the chair, that advisory has looked at a strategic plan over the next couple of years, and one area is to advocate for children in Hawaii to learn how to swim. Now that is being on the ground being done by nonprofits. And so we wouldn't be in the business of doing, the government entity wouldn't be in the business of doing that, but at least advocating for that.
Bridget, earlier in the show, we took a call from Colin Yamamoto, a retired battalion chief in ocean safety on Maui, and Colin said he would call us again at the end of the show. Colin, we're rapidly running out of time, but you had a comment?
Yeah, so thank you, Chris. My comment is, because tourism is key to the economic well-being for Hawaii, and what basically sells Hawaii is the great weather, the beaches, the culture, but the other thing is safety. You know, because Hawaii is a safe place to visit, that draws people to Hawaii, and because the airline industry has not been too receptive of our idea of showing a safety video, I've been trying to advocate to show a safety video, make it a state law, similar to how we have to fill out an agricultural form when coming in from the mainland. And federal law is when you're coming from a foreign country, you have to fill out a customs form. So if we could make it a state law to show a safety video, that would really help in getting the message out to our visitors.
Colin, thanks very much for checking in with us. And thanks to all our callers. We're about a minute away from wrapping all this up, and we want to thank our guest Jim Howe is the current Honolulu Ocean Safety Director, Bridget Velasco, State Drowning Prevention Coordinator, and Ralph Goto is the former City and County of Honolulu Ocean Safety Director. Any quick comments as we come to an end, Jim?
Well, I want to thank Colin for bringing that point up, is that, you know, tourism is our economy now, and we are inviting people to our home here. We have a culture which is very welcoming. I think we're very proud of the fact that we want to look after our visitors as our own ohana. And to me, this is just part of what we should be doing. We need to make sure that we're helping our visitors who come here to benefit from what we know and learn as children and adults about how to use our oceans. And they will have a great time, a great experience, and they'll want to come back again.
Fair enough. Thanks to all our guests for joining us today. And apologies to guests we weren't able to include, but we will record your comments and address them later.
And we thank you, the listener. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the TalkBack line and leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. We're especially interested in your experiences related to water safety.
You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. If you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast on hawaiipublicradio.org. Thanks again to our panel, and I'm Chris Vandergoed.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.